and welcome to the Student Loan Planner Podcast. It's Travis, and today I'm going to take a little bit of a detour outside of the student loan lane that we talk about in today's show to talk about something that's been coming up a lot lately in a lot of the different student loan type of consults that I do. And sometimes I just think it's kind of fun to address a money topic that is student loan adjacent that comes up a lot with the people that we do student loan consults for. And I just think that you'd probably enjoy this conversation. So just wanted that little preface. Let's kick off today's show. I've been doing some reflecting on conflicts of interest lately. Every single profession has them, and hopefully you have ways of managing them. I've been to a lot of medical conferences with my wife who's a physician, and one of the things they always make you do in all the medical talks is, I have no financial disclosures, or I have financial disclosures, here's my disclosures, here's the potential conflicts of interest. I do think that in the financial advisor space, there's a lot of talk about like fiduciary. I have to act in your best interest. And that's true. Legally, that is what the fiduciary standard means. But whether you're a financial planner or an attorney or whatever, like you have a fiduciary standard, but it still doesn't mean that there's no conflicts of interest. And I think it's useful when you're evaluating and working with anybody and thinking about conflicts of interest in life, just to think about how do people disclose those and, you know, what are the things that you need to do to protect yourself from somebody's conflicts of interest. The reason this came up recently is I was having this really fascinating consult with this very high income specialty couple. They were a real team. It was really cool to see them both planning for the future together. One spouse was staying home with the kids. One spouse was working and making the very high income, and they already had a financial planner. And so I was asking them some questions. They were really saving quite well. They were on a track towards, you know, retirement in their 50, early 50s if they wanted to. And I asked them the question, what are your goals? Like, what do you want more of right now? And they said things like more time for the high earning spouse to be around the kids, more time as a family, more travel experiences. They talked about wanting to make certain kinds of memories, like in the outdoors on, you know, ski trips or something like that. It might not have been ski trips. It might have been canoeing adventures. I can't recall off the top of my head because it was a few weeks ago. But the gist was that they wanted to spend more money. But their financial planner was talking to them about their quarterly bonuses that they get. And the planner told them, oh, we need a plan to figure out how to invest that. We need to make sure that we invest that for you. And we need to strategize about, you know, how do we maximize the returns on that money? I asked them how they felt about that because they were like in such good shape saving. And they told me all these goals they wanted to do, which involved spending more money, but they felt like they couldn't do it. And so I asked them the question, what do you want? What would you like to use that money for, the bonus money for? And they're like, well, we thought that bonus money was going to be for us. We thought we were going to be able to use it to enjoy on ourselves. And don't get me wrong, if somebody's overspending, you know, you'd be a very bad financial planner if you didn't at least let them know that. It's still their life, it's their money, their decisions, but you'd want to let them know, hey, you're not on track for your goals as stated. You know, what is more important to you, you know, achieving this particular goal or this range of goals or having the current lifestyle that you have? That's a reasonable conversation to have, but that's not what was going on with this couple. This couple was saving really well. And they were essentially being told by their planner they weren't allowed to spend their bonus money that they were earning. I thought, golly, that's rotten. I mean, I don't think that the planner was a bad person. I don't think they're a crook or anything, but I do think that they're pretty heavily influenced by conflicts of interest. There's a saying that it's difficult for someone to understand something when their paycheck depends on them not understanding it. So this particular pay structure for this planner was a typical, you know, 1% AUM fee structure. And this person, again, was an extremely high earning physician. And so you think about the advice that was being given. Well, they were being told, well, yeah, this $200,000 of bonus income that you make every year, yeah, you need to invest all of it. And what does that do for them? Every single year, it gets them an additional $2,000 a year of revenue, exponentially increasing because this person was younger. So, you know, he would grow with the market, that AUM fee. Now, let me say this. I think that AUM fees are, I don't actually think that they're bad. And you might say, oh, this guy's a crook. He's got a financial planning firm. He's a jerk, you know. Vanguard has AUM fees. Vanguard has, on total stock market index, they have a 0.04% AUM fee. So the vast majority of even the most hardcore DIY investors, pay AUM fees. That is an asset under management fee because it's your index fund being managed by Vanguard to invest in hundreds of stocks or whatever. What that means is it's not the AUM fee that's bad. It's the amount of the AUM fee that could be bad. Same thing on a flat fee. A flat fee in general for a service is not necessarily a bad thing. What matters is the amount of the flat fee. In other words, what value are you getting? So when somebody is paying a 1% AUM fee and they have a conflicted advisor who has revenue targets they have to hit for their firm, whose pay heavily depends on growing their AUM, and they see a giant meal ticket in front of them that they can try to tell them, oh, make them feel bad, right? Oh, you're not doing good enough. You're not doing good enough. You got to save more. You got to save more. That is very conflicted. That is very conflicted advice. And I hope that you free yourself from having to feel and think that way. I will say this, the vast majority of people listening to my voice right now, you are probably a great saver. There are some people that are struggling, trying to make ends meet, listening to this pod. A lot of people, some people that can't afford our paid service, which is why they listen to the podcast, right? So I want to be cognizant. There's a very diverse group of people listening to the podcast right now. But on average, people that listen to very niche, very complex financial podcasts are way, way better off with their finances than the average person, like way better off. So it is far more likely that you listening to this are saving a lot more than you need than you're not saving enough of what you need. And if you get your downside protection in place, you know, your own occupation disability insurance, if you're a medical professional, your term life insurance, if you have kids, if that's all locked down, then everything else is pretty much upside. And so if you do a good job saving early in your career, most people from my thousands of consults I've done over the years, I have a question I love to ask them. I say, if you had $10 million tomorrow, what would you do? Almost all of them, not everybody, some people said retire immediately. I find that's like 5 to 10% of people. And those people generally are like feeling burnout. The other like 90, 95% of people, almost all of them say they'd make a change. So almost no one says they wouldn't make no change, just to be clear. But almost that 90% of people, they say, I'd reduce my call shifts. I'd reduce my hours at work. I would stop taking X type of procedures. Whatever it is, that they'll say that they would curtail the worst parts of their job that they would then have power over because they would no longer need to work. And they would only do the stuff that they enjoy and gives them purpose and meaning. And a lot of people go into professional fields because they want to feel that purpose and meaning of helping people with special skills. That's a wonderful thing. I think that's a blessing to have those skills. The rewards that you get from those skills, your financial rewards, the payment you get for it. I think the question is how long do you want to do it? If you have good disability insurance, then you're good in terms of meeting your income needs and your basic family expense needs, right, until age 65. So if you're going to keep working and saving anyway, because that's just your default setting, then you should feel okay loosening the screws a little bit and enjoying the things that bring you the most joy. What I find, though, looking at a lot of people's spending reports is a lot of people spend a lot of money on things that don't particularly give them much joy. You know, particularly things that you might use once or twice a year. I mean, for example, there's like types of furniture, special furniture that you might sit on five times the whole time you own it because it's in a random part of your house. It's real important to reflect on what are the things that bring you deep joy and what are the things that do not bring you that much joy. You know, when you're working with somebody like a financial planner, you do want to think about what are their conflicts of interest. So you're talking to somebody, if they get paid that 1% AUM fee, you know that they only make a lot more money if you continue putting a lot more money with them if you're an accumulator, especially. If somebody's only way they get paid is that AUM fee, well, then they want you to disproportionately just invest all your money with them and not actually enjoy it. If you have a real estate investment you want to make and they're asked, you know, hey, should I invest this or should I use it to do the real estate investment? You know, an advisor would have a conflict to say, well, do the investment with me because I get paid on it. Now, the way I thought about this when we started a financial planning firm was the same way I thought about it when we did student loan refinancing. What I mean by that is student loan refinancing has these earnings that you get when somebody does a refinance on your website, right? And what our strategy was to rebate a lot of that earnings and turn it into a bonus. That was partially because we wanted to have the best deals anywhere, but we also wanted to have the lowest conflict of interest. And so we charged for the consult service when the math would say that we actually shouldn't charge, that we should do it for free, and that we should just tell everybody to refinance because mathematically, we probably would make more money that way. And there are firms out there that did that and do that. That's a big conflict of interest. That's a huge thumb on the scale that tilts your advice in a particular direction. So basically, my thought process was, well, I really like how we try to manage conflicts of interest with Student Loan Planner, and I wanted to try to incorporate that into SLP Wealth. And so that is why SLP Wealth has, you know, a flat fee, and we also have a AOM fee for people that invest directly with us, but it is far lower than what a lot of places charge. Again, that's to not have a huge conflict to tell somebody to invest when maybe they should be spending the money instead. Maybe they should be putting it into real estate. Maybe they should be putting it into their practice. I think that you deserve advice and help that's customized to you from a group that gets you and gets it. And I don't just mean financial planning. I also mean when you renovate your house, when you, you know, update your kitchen, when you do an expansion, when you hire tutors for kids or something. Like, I'll tell you just one quick tool that I've been using lately. I don't get paid for saying this. It's not a sponsorship, but this interesting tool called DuckBill. It's like a $99 a month tool that you can use to like find different things and book certain things for you. It's kind of like an interesting, you can tell it like go find a bunch of highly rated carpenters and send this picture to them and ask if they can build this desk from this random antique furniture that showed up at my house from your spouse's order from Etsy, right? And then they can go handle that for you. That's kind of some random thoughts. But what I mean is like, try to source great help for great value everywhere in your life. You want to get that niche help that's aware and also just cares about what you're asking. I just mainly wanted to do today's pod just to talk about some of those conflicts of interest I've been seeing with people and the advice they're getting. I remember another one I did about a couple of weeks ago. This dentist was sold a five-figure a year whole life policy. I saw a veterinarian that got charged something similar. And I remember the veterinarian one in particular because it was a veterinarian who had 8% student loans. This is back in like 2018, so it's a long time ago. She wasn't funding her retirement, and this whole life person sold her like a $5,000 or $10,000 a year policy, like a whole life policy. And I asked her, you know, how much she understood about that, how much she understood about Roths and 401ks and investing. And she talked about like, oh, this policy is going to yield a 5% yield and it's going to grow tax deferred. And, you know, I said, well, you know, first off, you're a better case for forgiveness. But if you're going for forgiveness, you know, you should max out your pre-tax 401ks because it brings down your AGI and saves you a ton of money on your student loan payments. So that's a better idea than, you know, putting after-tax dollars into something like a whole life policy. But I said, but let me think about the person who sold this policy to you for a second. They are either incompetent or they're an idiot or dishonest. And the reason I say that is, well, if you have somebody with a 5% investment and they have an 8% student loan, at a minimum, I would think an honest person would say, well, it doesn't make sense for me to sell somebody a 5% investment when something that they have debt on is costing them 8%. Now, in this case, you know, an investment is actually what they needed to do, right? Because they need to go for forgiveness, so they shouldn't treat their debt like a debt. It should be a tax. Actually, in a funny way, like the advice to put your money into investments instead of the debt is not terrible advice overall. But this person didn't know that. This person didn't know the first thing about student loans that sold her the policy. He just cared about the commission. That's it. That's he wanted money. He cares about money. He wants to pay his bills. He doesn't give a you know what about this person. I'm not saying that every whole life insurance agent is a bad person, by the way. That's not true at all. There are honest people in every profession, even the conflicted ones that have heavy conflicts of interest. There are people that do need whole life insurance for various reasons. People that are terrified of the stock market, people that feel great comfort in it, people that just wouldn't save anything if they didn't have like a regular scheduled payment coming out or something, right? People that have complex estate planning needs. So there's ethical people. But I just thought it was interesting because this is like an example in my mind of just like conflicts of interest just run amok. You're going to sell somebody that doesn't understand the policy at all, a big policy to maximize your commission, and you're going to completely ignore that she has 8% student loans and that she's losing a guaranteed 3% interest every single year on the arbitrage between what she's earning on the investment and what she's losing on the student loan. And the person didn't care at all. And I sent them a nice email initially. And I was like, hey, like, I wasn't sure if you're aware of this. Like, this person needs to max out their pre-tax 401k. Can you help her convert it or, you know, do term life with the premiums paid up or something like that? And the person's like, I've been doing this 25 years. Now dare you question my, you know, my advice. And, you know, you have no basis to be saying this. I know exactly what I'm doing. And I was basically like, yeah, I do know what you're doing. You care about your paycheck. You care about what you earn. That's what you care about, money. She should not work with somebody like this. You know, help her out, let her out of the policy, facilitate it, please, if that's what she instructs you to do. Or, you know, she can file a complaint. I don't know. I mean, I just get steamed with folks that let that just pure looking out for myself, money-making instinct take over, right? Maybe it's kind of like a self-righteous kind of thing that like is me being stuck up or something. I mean, I don't know. It could be that. Maybe I'm like a holier-than-thou attitude or something. But I guess my general reason for doing today's pod is just, okay, one, I'm going to be honest. I wanted to take a break from talking about student loans for a little bit for just a week. And then two, I just wanted to call out how student loan borrowers, when like professionals in a lot of cases don't understand your unique needs, they'll just say something anyway because they want to make money on you. And they might not know what, I mean, I actually get a lot of referrals from very ethical professionals that like have no idea how to advise somebody. And they do, or they are very much looking out for the person that they're talking to because they realize, okay, I don't know what to tell this person. And then a lot of people, professionals even listen to this podcast and get advice and tips on how to help student loan borrowers, and more people are helped, and that's good too. And then, you know, I just sometimes, you know, I hear of stories of professionals that serve student loan borrowers, and then you find out like they're selling whole life or they're selling high commission variable annuities, or they just have a conflict of interest. They're a fiduciary, but they just are looking out for their AOM totals instead of like what the goals are for the client. I don't know. Hopefully we don't do that with all of our products. What we try to do at SLP, be it advising, mortgages, insurance, et cetera, is we try to find you the best deal. Even if it's not with us, we try to find you the best deal. I can't promise we're always going to find that, but we do our best. And we try to make sure that we have as many options as possible for you to get the best deals and any kind of things we put on the website. That's kind of my philosophy. And, you know, since we're servicing a very specific group of people, student loan borrowers like yourself, usually we're able to provide like best in class knowledge or service or whatever for that particular niche because we're very hyper targeted on it. If you want to ask a question for the pod, studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. If you randomly listen to this and you're inspired hey, maybe these guys are legit and do actually care about their conflicts of interest and putting the client first. If you're interested in a financial planning relationship beyond just student loans, you could go to start.slpwealth.com. So again, that's start.slpwealth.com, and you can get a discount for joining with your first month. And we'd love to try to help you. And if we can't help you, then you're not out a bunch of money at all if you just tell us that it's not for you. And it very well could be for you if you have a lot of student loan debt and you feel like you've been taken advantage of by people that are not paying attention to your needs in the past that you've talked to. So I deeply appreciate you listening to the Student Loan Planner Pod. Thank you for letting me have a break to talk about something besides student loans and just sort of riff a little bit. I hope you were entertained a little bit, at least. And if anybody wants to take me out that's in the whole life insurance industry, you know, just at least give me a chance to ask for forgiveness before you off me, right? So again, you know, ethical people in every industry, but every single industry is subject to conflicts of interest. And as a consumer, you just have to know, you have to ask, what are your conflicts? How do you mitigate your conflicts of interest? Give an example of how you give advice that's in my best interest, even when you have a conflict of interest. If somebody's like offended by those questions, it's not a good professional or a group to work with, right? Because they should be able to easily handle those questions. So thank you for listening to Student Loan Planner Pod. Again, you've heard the voicemail link, and then start.slpwealth.com if you're interested in trying out SLP Wealth Financial Planning. Thank you, everybody. Have a great rest of your week. Are you on the free Student Loan Planner email list? If yes, you can upgrade your experience and discover student loan loopholes so good, they might get repealed if I talk about them publicly. Find out my very best thought leadership that I really just can't be super open about anymore, unfortunately. If you want to get our very best tips, not just the ones that I can share for free, go to studentloanplanner.com/insider to get a special discount for your year membership. That's studentloanplanner.com/insider and get our very best dozens of bonus content and tips that's going to save you money and get you out of student debt faster. And if you're already an SLP insider, please reply back to those emails and let me know how I can make it even more valuable.